Welcome to Whiplash Talk. This is Sunshine coming to you. Happy to be here with you. Excited you've joined me. And if you're coming on when it's a rerun or a replay, I am just so excited to have you here. I just wanted to open up and let you guys know that it has been 2 weeks since we've been together. And a lot has happened. And I'm still right in the middle of that whiplash. And I just want you to know that even when the swirling chaos is around you, always look for your joy. Always try to find your peace. Always find your center. So I went to one of my favorite books. It's a book that has the writings of Florence Scovel Shinn in it. And it has the four books that she's written: The Game of Life, Your Word is Your Wand, The Power of the Spoken Word, and The Secret Door to Success. If you're not familiar with Florence Scovel Shinn, it may not be much of a surprise to a lot of people. A lot of people may not know about her. She wrote The Game of Life and How to Play It in 1925. Your Word is Your Wand was written in 1928. The Secret Door to Success in 1940. And The Power of the Spoken Word in 1945. But there's so much wisdom in her writings that I gravitate back to this book whenever I need to find what surveyors may call, you know, their plumb, their center, where they stay grounded, where their center is. And in this book, under The Game of Life, which she wrote in 1925, there is a chapter called Casting the Burden. And in parentheses, she called it Impressing the Subconscious. And in going into this book, I started reading about it. And what I've learned coming out of being raised in the Christian church from young age, I mean, participated since I was big enough to carry a palm branch on Palm Sunday. I've been there a long time. I started looking at this book and listening to Q and Asha and Mermaid and listening to other people that I trust with my foundation that I'm rebuilding. And there are things that they teach, like, you know, taking your thoughts captive, you know, I command my spirit to take the thoughts in my head and drop them into my heart. And they talk about how our thoughts and our emotions are misleading or could be even be deceptive. And that we're to be led by our heart, which a lot of us that were raised in the Christian church were taught that, you know, the heart is wicked and evil and deceitful. And so that's kind of a whiplash for us because we're like, wait, what? How are we supposed to lead and make decisions from our heart? Because we're not supposed to be heart-led, you know? And so I turned to the chapter called Casting the Burden, and I started reading a little bit to try to figure out what she had to say about this. And I've had this book for years, and it didn't jump out at me until I was preparing for this show. And she started to say, when a man knows his own powers and the workings of his mind, his great desire is to find an easy and quick way to impress the subconscious with good. For simply an intellectual knowledge of the truth will not bring results. She went on to say in her own case, she found the easiest way is in casting the burden. She's mentioned a metaphysician once explained it in this manner. He said, the only thing which gives anything weight in nature is the law of gravitation. And if a boulder could be taken high above the planet, there would be no weight in that boulder. And that is what Jesus Christ meant when he said, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. When I mention Christ or Jesus Christ in this reading, as she wrote it, you can insert source, you can insert spirit, you can insert whatever works for your belief system and where you're at. So I went on to reading, and I'm like, okay, well, that makes sense for the subconscious, but how does this work for what I'm learning and what I've been doing, that I am to command my spirit to take the thoughts on my head and drop them into my heart? And it jumped off the page at me whenever she was talking about the superconscious mind, and she put in parentheses, or Christ within. And I'm like, hey, the superconscious mind, and what I would say, or spirit or source within, is the department which fights man's battle and relieves him of burdens. I'm like, there it is. Back in 1925, there it is. And it went on to say that we see, therefore, that man violates laws if he carries a burden. And a burden is an adverse thought or condition. And so that aligned with what I've been learning about commanding my spirit to take the thoughts in my head and drop them into my heart center. And it says, and this thought or condition has its root in the subconscious. And I'm like, it's been here in this book that I've had for years, and it didn't jump off the page until recently. She continued to say, it seems almost impossible to make any headway directing the subconscious from the conscious or reasoning mind, as the reasoning mind, the intellect, is limited in its conceptions and filled with doubts and fears. How scientific it is, then, to cast the burden upon the superconscious mind or spirit within, where it is, quote, made light, L-I-G-H-T, or dissolved into its native nothingness. She gave a couple of examples, and I liked the examples. She said, for example, a woman in urgent need of money made light upon the spirit within, the superconscious, with the statement, I cast this burden of lack on my spirit within, and I go free to have plenty. The belief in lack was her burden, and as she cast it upon the superconscious with its belief of plenty, an avalanche of supply was the result. She continued to give another example. One of my students had been given a piano, and there was no room in her studio for it until she had moved out the old one. She was in a state of perplexity. She wanted to keep the old piano, but knew of no place to send it. She became desperate, as the new piano was to be sent immediately, in fact, was on its way with no place to put it. She said it came to her to repeat, I cast this burden on the spirit within, and I go free. A few moments later, her phone rang, and a woman friend asked if she might rent her old piano, and it was moved out a few minutes before the new one arrived. She continued to say she knew another woman whose burden was resentment. She said, I cast this burden of resentment on the spirit within, and I go free to be loving, harmonious, and happy. The Almighty Spirit, superconscious within, flooded the subconscious with love, and her whole life was changed. For years, resentment had held her in a state of torment and imprisoned her soul, the subconscious mind. The statement should be made over and over and over, sometimes for hours at a time, silently or audibly, with quietness but determination. She continued to say, I often compared it to winding up a Victrola. Remember, this was written in 1925. And she said, we must wind ourselves up with spoken words. I have noticed in casting the burden, after a little while, one seems to see clearly. It is impossible to have clear vision while in the throes of carnal mind. Doubts and fear poison the mind and body, and imagination runs riot, attracting disaster and disease. I have a friend who had an absolute disaster happen in his life that was just incredibly devastating to him and his family unit. And the bitterness and the anger wreaked havoc, absolutely wreaked havoc. And the doubts and fear poison the mind and body, and imagination runs riot, attracting disaster and disease, is a fact. It does happen. You have to be careful what you allow yourself to dwell on and to think on and to mull over, because it is poison. It is poisonous and disastrous to your body. In steadily repeating the affirmation, quote, I cast this burden on the spirit within and go free, the vision clears, the fogginess goes away, and with it a feeling of relief, and sooner or later comes the manifestation of good, be it health, happiness, or supply. One of my students asked me to explain the darkness before the dawn. I referred in a preceding chapter to the fact that often before the big demonstration, everything seems to go wrong and deep depression clouds the consciousness. It means that out of the superconscious are rising the doubts and fears of the ages. The old derelicts of the superconscious rise to the surface to be put out. She references a biblical reference. It is then that man should clap his cymbals like Jehoshaphat and give thanks that he is saved, even though he seems surrounded by the enemy, the situation of lack or disease. The student continued, how long must we remain in the dark? And I replied, until one can see in the dark and cast the burden, and casting the burden enables them to see in the dark. In order to impress the subconscious, active faith is always essential. So as I continue on to the next subject, we're going to go and talk about more about dark night of the soul. So I'm going to take a little break here for about 2 minutes, play some good music for you, and I'll be back in about 2 minutes. Thanks so much. Welcome back. Just because we're going through it doesn't mean we can't dance across the room to that music. I love that music, and I am so tickled that it's even called Sunshine. So thank you so much for coming back. Let's go ahead and pick up where we left off. We were transitioning into Dark Night of the Soul and kind of what that means and how that impacts different people. I did some research and I found a website called Wellismo. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Wellismo.com. And Michael DeLorio is the founder and certified life and wellness coach of Wellismo Coaching. A little bit about his bio, it goes on to say he works with a wide range of clients, but he specializes in helping gay men build authentic confidence by empowering them to be more of who they really are. I obviously am not a gay man, but I believe everybody has wisdom and everybody has unique perspectives to bring to the table. And I really enjoyed what I read that Michael wrote about on Lean Into the Darkness and the Four Stages of a Dark Night of the Soul. It was an April 30th, 2019 blog that he has on his website. So let me tell you a little bit about Michael, and then we'll get into what the blog had to say. He was, before he started his own business, he spent 13 years climbing the corporate ladder in the financial services industry. He enjoyed most of those years and developed a reputation as an effective and inspiring leader. It was there where he first honed his coaching skills. Pardon me. He was using a human-centered approach with his employees. Sorry, I got choked. That focused on the mindset, motivation, and empowerment. At the time, this was a rare yet effective approach. He quickly realized that the same concepts and tools he used in professional development could be used to help people in their personal lives too. For him, life coaching felt more impactful and rewarding than professional coaching. So, in 2019, Michael took a leap to exit the rat race and begin a new chapter as an entrepreneur life coach. It was the scariest decision of his life, but deep down, he knew it was the right one. He got certified with the International Association of Wellness Professionals and started a new career from scratch. In 2020, he expanded his popular wellness blog, Wellismo, to include life coaching services as a way to directly support clients through their own personal transformation. He coached clients of all genders and sexual preferences, but he says he is intimately familiar with the unique challenges that come with being a gay man in the gay community. What makes him different? He takes a candid approach in discussing sexuality and more taboo aspects of gay culture. He stated that Wellismo represents the other side of gay culture, the inner strength, the authenticity, vulnerability, courage, and love. In my search for articles that were real and helpful about being dark and depressing, without being a dark, depressing subject, the dark night of the soul, I stumbled across Michael's blog and found this to be helpful. Pardon me. I trust you will find it to be helpful too. So let's dig into his blog and learn. Lean Into the Darkness, Four Stages of Dark Night of the Soul, April 30th, 2019. He talked about starting out, there were four things that could really trigger a dark night of the soul. The unexpected death of a loved one. Check. I've had that happen within the last year and 2 months. A terminal diagnosis. Check, I have a very close friend that is in a battle for their life right now. Losing your job and source of livelihood. Check, that has happened to me within the last year. A painful relationship breakdown. Check, that has happened to me within the last few months. So I think I could probably say I'm probably dancing through the dark night of the soul. So dark, he goes on to start and say, dark periods in our lives can manifest at any moment and in any number of ways. Personally, he has experienced, I said, personally, I experienced all four of those in the past 2 years. I would say I feel like I've been put in a blender. Might be a little bit of an understatement, but I'm always looking for sunshine in the midst of the storm, to dance in the midst of the rain, keep the higher vibrations up, so to speak. So let's continue with Michael's blog. Darkness is an inevitable part of life and universal to all of us. Pardon me. It is something we can all relate to at the most basic human level. And yet we tend to spend more time and energy avoiding it rather than simply experiencing it, because it induces the most dreadful of emotions, such as suffering, despair, and hopelessness. But what is the right spirit? What is the significant spiritual experience of this darkness? The dark night of the soul. Conventional wisdom says there's three typical ways to grow our spiritual muscles: learning from a spiritual teacher or sage, possessing an intrinsic desire to seek out spiritual knowledge, or through what is called a dark night of the soul. While the first two may be preferred, the latter is the most effective. Learning and seeking to give you the lesson first, so then you can use the life experience to put it into practice. But as you can guess, the dark night of the soul starts with the final exam you didn't ask for, and then forces you to learn lessons you didn't want. It goes back to, Michael states, the term originates from St. John of the Cross, a 16th century Spanish Catholic monk and a poet who was locked in a dungeon for 11 months by his own brotherhood. During imprisonment, all illusions of his mortal life peeled away. Everything that he thought was up to that point in his life deteriorated until all he was left with was a deep connection to God. Over the course of time, the story has been borrowed and reframed for different purposes. It does not belong to a particular religion, or when shorn of its original Catholic language, the term has evolved to mean a long period of darkness, disconnection, and emptiness within one's soul, but eventually causes an internal spiritual transformation. These days, the term is used more loosely and can be associated with depression. The key difference is that along with the psychological, biological, and neurological effects of depression, which should be treated accordingly, and I agree, there is a deeper spiritual transformation occurring at the same time. The moral of the dark night of the soul story is that the painful experiences in our lives provide the greatest opportunity for our spiritual growth and maturity. He says the hallmarks of a dark night. So how do you know if you're experiencing a dark night of the soul? It may be ushered in by a traumatic event or tragedy, or sometimes it is a personal internal strength, like coming to terms, as he said, with your sexuality. Sometimes it's both. While the term tends to be overused these days, here are some characteristics or phrases that Michael thinks define a dark night of the soul. Identity crisis. A dark night of the soul has a way of forcing you to question your identity right down to your very core. You're being shown that you're not who you think you are. Instead, it reveals truths about yourself that you don't necessarily like or want to see. It cracks you wide open and forces you to question the very nature of who you are. I can tell you, being raised in a Christian church with Christian belief system and Christian values, and knowing with what's going on in the world now, and understanding all of the evil that's going on right now, I won't get into the details. I can say that I am a bit in an identity crisis, wondering, okay, I knew how to pray, but now I don't know how to pray. I knew how to take care of and understand where I'm going after I die and where my mother is now that she's passed. I'm in an identity crisis. I don't have all those answers. He goes on to talk about number two is a shattered belief system, which goes into that as well. Experiencing a dark night of the soul changes you at a fundamental level. It has a long-lasting and far-reaching impact to your beliefs, your perceptions, and the way you experience life. Even your definition of life itself may change. The strongly held beliefs that you identified with previously will crumble and leave you feeling disoriented. It is an uncomfortable shedding of the skin that had defined you up until this point. Completely agree. My belief system has changed. I don't have that system to go to. I can't go to church and share what I'm feeling because my belief system has changed. My belief system is not in Father God and Jesus and the angels are there to help and protect me. I believe there's a source, but I believe that the source in me is the power that I am to command and rely on and to work through. And that is not a belief system in the Christian church. So the third step he talks about in the Hallmarks of a Dark Night is withdrawing. A dark night of the soul is the spiritual equivalent of a caterpillar transforming into a butterfly. And this butterfly is part of that transformation. It's retreating into a protective cocoon or chrysalis. And these times you may find yourself withdrawing from life, perhaps distracting yourself with things that numb the pain. However, successfully navigating the dark night requires honest introspection, contemplation, and quiet time. This is a good time to meditate, journal, and seek resources, including people that can help understand the profound nature of what you're going through. Having that shattered belief system and in withdrawing, I have had to look out to different people and different resources and find new perspectives, trying to dig down and get to the truth of what is going on. So I have found that I am a bit of a caterpillar in a cocoon and trying to get those resources and find people that can help me get through this process. And then it talks about the transformation is the fourth step. And as you come out of the cocoon, you will begin to experience life from a whole new perspective. You will see things that you were blind to before. You will make connections and see patterns in your life that will help illuminate your path forward. New people and experiences will show up and help guide you along the journey. You will see yourself and the world around you in a whole new light. He goes on to talk about his dark night of the soul came from an experience after a severe and unexpected breakup in 2014. And for almost a year, he felt like his world had turned upside down. He had been through breakups before, but this was a whole new level. And he said that his usual support systems didn't have the same impact and his standard of coping mechanisms were sterile. Michael considered himself mentally and emotionally strong, but this was something he couldn't seem to recover from. Never had he felt so lost, alone, or hopeless. He was forced to see a side of himself that he didn't want to acknowledge. Michael had lost his trademark confidence and enthusiasm. Instead, he saw a part of himself that was deeply codependent and insecure, traits he would never have used to describe himself before. Michael temporarily withdrew from life until a series of serendipitous events got him onto a path where, with the help of his loved ones, he was able to slowly dig himself out. So the solution to his problem was at a deeper soul level and not at the mental or physical level where he was looking. It wasn't until Michael acknowledged that he was more than just his body and his thoughts that he was able to turn things around and evolve into the next version of himself. He stated, like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz, he always had the power within him. He just had to learn it for himself. So I agree with this. Michael continued to say, we can have multiple dark nights of the soul over the course of a lifetime, varying in duration and intensity, but there's always one in particular that consumes us to the point where he leaves us feeling utterly empty. It leaves us feeling utterly empty and decimated when it's over. Regardless of its severity, when we find ourselves in any kind of darkness, instead of avoiding it, we have the option to work with it in a way that is transformative. Michael referenced a book by Barbara Brown Taylor, author of Learning to Walk in the Dark. And it said, looking for divinity in the darkness. What if I could trust my feelings instead of asking to be delivered from them? What if I could follow one of my greatest fears all the way to the edge of the abyss, take a breath, and keep going? Isn't there a chance of being surprised by what happens next? Better than that, what if I could learn to stay in the present instead of letting my anxieties run on fast forward? And that was by Barbara Brown Taylor. Michael continued to say, "We're trained to keep our vibes high, stay positive, and be happy. When darkness shows up, we want to avoid it at all costs, so we flee. There is a fearful response. It is important that these moments to pause, ask ourselves, what are we fleeing from? What are we not wanting to look at? Chances are, it is something that once uncovered will significantly aid in our personal growth. A guide through the darkness. Every experience in life helps us know more fully who we are. Dark periods are no exception and have their place and purpose. The goal isn't to eliminate them, but rather to navigate our way through them. By probing the shadows of our lives and accepting darkness in all its forms, we have an opportunity before us." So in this, and in reading all of this, there was another quote that he included by Barbara Brown Taylor. And it said, "I have learned things in the darkness that I could never have learned in the light. Things that have saved my life over and over again, so that there is really only one logical conclusion. I need darkness as much as I need light." And I agree with that. It's kind of odd, but I really do agree with that. I have a magnet on my computer, and oddly enough, I have had this magnet for 15 years, maybe, a long time. And this magnet says, "Just when the caterpillar thought the world was over, it became a butterfly." I'm going to go into a break, and we're going to go into the last part of my subjects, but I'm going to play some music for you, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes, and we'll be back. Thanks so much. Welcome back. I hope you enjoyed some of that sunshine sending your way through the music vibes. Okay, so we're talking about a pretty heavy subject, about the dark night of the soul. But I did some research, and there's a common thread that I'm finding in all of this. And the common thread is, yep, it's tough. Yep, it kind of stinks. But there's always the metamorphosis. Stay with it. There's going to be sunshine at the end of this. And so I just encourage you guys to stick with it. If you're walking through what I'm walking through, stick with it. Find your happiness. Find your happy spot. Find what you like to do, even in the midst of the swirling chaos around you. Find your happy and recenter yourself there. So I did some more research, and there was an article that I found on the internet. It was called Dark Night of the Soul. Shocker. Jennifer, I believe it would be pronounced Hiranya Rose, was the author. And the subtitle was, What is the Dark Night of the Soul in Terms of Spiritual Growth? Which that is important to me. And it went on to say, the dark night of the soul is a metamorphic melting pot and refers to the period of time after your spiritual awakening. You can't attain a permanent state of enlightenment without it, and your spiritual growth will stall if you try to avoid it. Well, that sucks. I don't know if I can say that, Dawn. Sorry. It is both a time and a place, and it is a choice. A spiritual awakening is one thing, but the path to enlightenment is another. Sustained enlightenment can only be achieved by purifying ego and embodying your awakening experience. A lot of people experience a spiritual awakening, but not many embrace the dark night of the soul with the intention of converting divine knowledge into embodied wisdom. The dark night of the soul is the chrysalis you weave for yourself to enable your full transformation to take place. It is the place and the time where you allow your old self to die and your new self to emerge. See the common thread here? It is the transition period where you are no longer the person you used to be, but not yet the person you're set to become. It involves the breaking down and dismantling of your entire belief system. Kind of like what's going on with the world right now. It is unlearning everything you've ever learned. It is disbelieving everything you've ever been taught to believe is true. Last 2 weeks ago, the last show, I talked about left was right and up is down, and nothing is the same. Nothing that I learned or that I believed was what I was taught. She continues to say, it is the untethering and letting go of all your identifications, attachments, and desires, including your desire to enlighten. I'm like, dang. It is to undomesticate yourself. It is the place of ultimate surrender. It is the place where you face your shadows and make your friends with fear, shame, anger, guilt, etc. When I read that and I thought, after all I've been through within the last year and 2 months, I'm like, really? I really have to go through that to get to the other side of this? Because I heard a lot already. It continued to say, it is a disorienting place. You can feel like you're going insane. Nothing will make sense. You will feel isolated, unable to relate to people. It will feel counterintuitive. You will question yourself endlessly. You will experience every known human emotion possible, and then some. You won't understand the process, but by the grace of God, you will trust it. And I would say, by the grace of Source in me, I will trust it. Because somewhere deep inside, something dormant has awoken, which keeps you piloting towards an unknown and uncertain destination. It does make me think of Q and how much he enjoys being on the ocean. And I, too, so enjoy being on the water. And it just makes me think of when it says something dormant has awoken, which keeps you piloting towards an unknown. When you're out in the middle of the ocean and there's no horizon, there's no lighthouse, there's no nothing. You just keep going towards the unknown and uncertain destination, trusting that you're on the right track, you're on the right path. And truth be told, she continues, and truth be told, once you've entered the dark night of the soul, there's no going back. I'm like, continued more good news. Yay. And then she says, much like a caterpillar that enters the cocoon, it has spun for itself. Once inside, its cells break down and the caterpillar turns to mush. It even starts eating itself. But as the transformation continues, dormant cells known as imaginal cells awaken, and the knowledge contained within these cells of what the caterpillar is set to become is unlocked. These imaginal cells coalesce and start resonating at the same frequency. As they increasingly attune to this new expanded frequency, the mush starts reforming itself into a butterfly. When it is fully formed, and only when it has strengthened its wings through the struggle involved with breaking out of its cocoon, the butterfly is granted the ultimate gift, freedom of flight. And so it is. The dark night of the soul is a place of unbecoming. In this way, you can become what you were always destined to be. It is the place where you learn to embody the divine truth of who you are. It is the place where you learn how to master your own energy to navigate this terrain. It is the most precious of places where, in return for your courage and your sacrifice, you are gifted the divine pathway that, when walked, leads to a permanently expanded consciousness. There is no set time for the dark night of the soul. In this place, things don't happen in time. They happen in alignment. And of course, it depends on how resistant you are to the process of transformation. She says, personally, mine has taken 7 years so far and counting, but the gifts far outweigh the suffering. And she says, I would do it all over again in a heartbeat. I really, really enjoyed that article. And I hope you did as well, because it really spoke to me, and it spoke to me on a level spiritually where I trust and believe where I'm supposed to be. There was another article that I looked up that was by Daniel Subke, an author, and it said, what is the dark night of the soul? And he said, a dark night of the soul is both the most painful and the best possible, most transformative thing anyone can and will experience at some point in their life. And in simple terms, he continues to say, it's a spiritual crisis, an ego death, an existential crisis, whatever you want to call it. He goes on to say, it is often triggered by a breakup or divorce, an accident, loss through death, or something similar. Any event that makes you question your belief system and decisions up until now. The purpose of it is to die to and let go of the false self identity so that you may become aware of who you really are and can be reborn into your truest self. That you realize that who you truly are is your higher self and your core essence. Your higher self is essentially your soul. I would say your higher self is essentially the source within you, as we would say. The most natural you. It is the you that is free from any kind of social conditioning, faulty belief systems, lies, defense mechanisms, deceptions, and masks. The you that has found, discovered, or created a purpose and meaning in life that goes way beyond superficial pleasures and happiness. The transformation into this you occurs through the pain and suffering you experience during the dark night of the soul. It is a very dark, intense stage in life because you will be facing the raw and brutal truth of life. However, once you come out of it, nothing will ever be the same. You will have experienced a spiritual awakening. Nobody can tell you how long this dark night of the soul will last. For me, he says, it lasted about 3 years, and for others, it can take as long as a few decades. It depends on how much ego and so on there is to let go of and how much is disconnecting you from your higher self. So to anyone who is experiencing this right now, he says, let me tell you this. No matter how dark and hopeless everything seems right now, or how abandoned you feel, keep going. Do not give up. All the inner work will pay off in ways you cannot imagine right now. And so, in bringing this kind of deep information to you, I want to tag on to that and say, no matter what I'm going through, no matter what you're going through, keep going, because we have got to get to the point to where we are truly in touch and in tune with the true person that we are, the true source that we are. And this will help others as well. I really do hope that you find your happy, as I said earlier, whether it be reading a book or playing with grandkids or walking your dog or gardening, sewing, cooking, barbecuing, whatever your happy is. Take time, even if your days are chaotic, take time to feed that happy in you. Create that sunshine that you need to be able to carry you through the dark night of the soul. I really want to thank each and every one of you for listening, for joining me as I go on this journey. I promise that I will continue to be open and honest with you about where I'm at and what I'm experiencing. But I also don't want it to be, as we would say, a downer or something that people are like, oh, it's an hour of down. I want it to be enlightening. I want it to be encouraging. And I want it to be a place where you can go and look at these resources and find more information that can help you where you're at in your walk, if you are also experiencing this type of journey that I am on. I guess I just want to say, just when the caterpillar thought the world was over, it truly became a butterfly. And I hope that for every person on here, man and woman, child, everyone, I really want you all to press in and press through and learn to walk in the dark. I have ordered that book by Barbara Brown Taylor. I haven't started it yet, but I'll keep you guys posted on it and let you know what I read and what I think about it. I'm working on trying to get us some guest speakers on here. There are a couple that I read from today that I would really like to get on here and see if we could get some guest speakers on. I'm also interested in the book, The Emotion Code by Dr. Bradley Nelson. I'm very interested in energy healing and want to also talk about that a little bit later on shows to come. So I'll be back here in 2 weeks. I promise I will be back. And I will be here to bring you more tidbits of my studies and my information and my walk and where I'm at. And I encourage you to stay happy, stay strong, find your happy. And I wish you guys all the best. Thanks for joining me on Whiplash Talk. This is Sunshine. Have a great 2 weeks, guys. Stay tuned for Q. He's coming up next. Have a great day. Bye now.